I've chosen two characters, two people shortly to talk about. And both of them, or they have something in common. They both have names that are very hard to pronounce. And you'll see what I mean as I carry on. So we're going to start, as my grandma would say, from the ridiculous and move to the sublime. So if you're remembering points, wait until we get to the sublime part, okay, because those will be the important ones, and I hope they come through. Okay, before we had all these wonderful little telephone gadgets that tell you everything you ever needed to know about life in general, way back in the day, we used to get our news, and we were anxious to get the daily news from radio. That's really taking me back. And from the newspaper. And every night, the newspaper boy would come and throw the newspaper on the step. And in my household, my grandpa would go out, get it, scan the headlines, see how the war was doing, because I go back that far, and check on the world news. But on a Saturday night, something really special happened, because on Saturday night, it wasn't just the newspaper, it was the newspaper, like it was thick. It was humongous, and there were all extra portions in it, different sections, but the most important thing about it was the funnies. That colored section in the middle, and everybody, even Grandpa sometimes, would kind of try and sneak that out first, and we'd hand it around. And I'm sure all of us, even those of you who don't go quite as far back as I do, I will remember, that wonderful feeling on a Sunday morning, sitting back with a cup of coffee or a glass of milk and reading about Dagwood's latest sandwich. Remember Dagwood and his sandwiches? I don't know how he ever got his mouth around them, but boy, he built some whoppers. And, the Cats and Yammer kids. Remember them and all the stuff they got up to? And I didn't like them that much. And I liked Dagwood. And then there was Popeye, you know, with his spinach, and Wimpy, who would gladly pay you on Tuesday for a hamburger today. And Felix the cat, I didn't care for him too much neither when I was a kid. He kind of scared me. But my very favorite cartoon was one about a little impoverished village down in Kentucky with a bunch of what we would call hillbillies who lived together. Does anybody remember Little Abner? Yeah, he was my favorite. And today I've been thinking that there are things from Little Abner that we can carry forward into the sublime part of this message. So I wonder, Grace, if we could get that very first. There he is. What a handsome dude, eh? This was Little Abner. And you will see he was really built. He was very handsome. He was very energetic. He was always walking with those great big steps. To be honest, he wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer. But he was the hero of the comic. And one thing about Little Abner, his heart was pure. Two syllables, pure. And he really did have the best of intentions. And he wanted to do the right thing. Little Abner had a hero. Now, he wasn't the kind that most parents would approve of. His hero was also a comic strip character. And his name was Fearless Fosdick. And Fearless Fosdick was something like Dick Tracy, and he was in the police force, I believe, and he went into all kinds of adventures. He was very violent. And Little Abner wanted to be like Fearless Fosdick, but he wasn't. He was much too nice. As a matter of fact, I believe Mama Yoakum, Little Abner's mom, used to say, "Good is better than evil, and it's nicer." And that was kind of the philosophy that Little Abner grew up on. So he was kind of the hero of that comic strip. But the guy I keep on thinking about and who's come to mind a lot during this last week is a completely different character. You know, there are always lots of extras in these comic strips, special people. And this was a very strange little man. And his name was Joe. And I can't say his last name. The reason is that his last name was made up of seven consonants. B-T-F-S-P-L-K. And when asked how you would say this, Al Capp, the creator of the cartoon, said, "You don't say it, you..." So you really don't want me to be talking about him too much this morning, do you? Because his name was Joe. And when I said this to Jane during the week, I was talking about names, and she said, "Well, if you have trouble with the names, get the congregation to say them. But don't, please, because it would be very messy if we all talked about Joe for the rest of the service." Is Joe up there? Could we have Joe up there now, please, Grace? This is Joe, and he appeared constantly in the comic, and he was always walking around with his hands behind his back. But you can see that he's a very different person to our wonderful hero, Little Abner. You see, Joe had this problem, and the problem was the rain cloud over his head. Wherever Joe went, his rain cloud followed him. And as he walked through Dog Patch, you would see behind him automobiles would smash into each other. Houses would just sort of disintegrate and collapse. Barns would go on fire. Pigs would fall over dead. And he would just be walking along with his rain cloud over his head. Poor Joe. Not only did he have a name that nobody could or cared to pronounce, but he had a problem. He had a heaviness. Now, I guess we can assume that he wasn't the most popular fellow in town. I think Joe walked alone a lot, and I think he was very lonely. And while I've been thinking about the story I wanted to share this morning, Joe has constantly come to mind, because I think some of us feel like him sometimes. We feel as if, what is wrong with me? What is this black cloud that hovers over my head all the time? Why does it always seem to happen to me? And we're lonely and we're withdrawn and it's not a good life. So that's the one half of my cast of characters, the ridiculous side, but very real, because cartoon writers and creators of cartoon strips usually have a message. And the people in the cartoons usually have something to teach us. And I think we can learn a lot from this sad little man with a hole in his shoe and the rain cloud over his head, creating havoc and unhappiness wherever he goes. Now, my next scenario is a little different. But I wonder if Al Capp was actually someone who read the Bible occasionally. Because there in the Old Testament, I found someone who I think must have felt a lot like Job a lot of the time in his life. Now, they had something else in common. This man also has a very difficult name to pronounce. So I'm going to give it a go. And if it comes out differently for the rest of the sermon, you're just going to have to automatically kick in the correct, do spell correct. Is that what it is? Autocorrect? If I get it wrong, you get it right in your head. His name was Mephibosheth. Now, if you say it really fast, it sounds like a sneeze. But I used to, as a little girl, always say Mephibosheth. But I've learned that it's really Mephibosheth. And I have trouble with F's. So you have to forgive me. The story behind Mephibosheth is that he lived in the days of King David and King Saul in Israel. As a matter of fact, Mephibosheth's grandfather was Saul the king. His father was Jonathan, the prince, the warrior, the friend of David. And this is the story of what happened to Mephibosheth. And we find it in 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4, starting. If we can get that one up. Okay, I'm going to read it just in case it's different. Jonathan, son of Saul, had a son who was lame in both feet. Notice those words there. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. His nurse picked him up and fled. But as she hurried to leave, he fell and became crippled. And his name was Mephibosheth. Now the news that came about Saul and Jonathan was one day in the palace, Mephibosheth was playing like a five-year-old will, having a good time with surrounded by servants, good food, lots of toys, everything he wanted, grandson of the king, when suddenly somebody burst into the palace and said, "Saul is dead. Jonathan is dead. Run for your lives. David will come and take over any time now." Well, can you imagine when you think of the two little guys that just went out with Nancy, how that would affect a child's life at that age? He was 5 years old. And all around him, all of a sudden, was complete confusion. Everybody was rushing around. The smart ones were probably gathering up gold cups and good clothing and things that they might take with them. And they were getting out of there as fast as they could. Because when a new king, a new ruler took over, he wasn't too friendly towards the family and the adherents of the previous king. Saul was dead. He was no longer king. David was obviously going to come and take over. And they were afraid for their lives. So all around this poor child, everybody is going completely bananas, getting out of there, escaping, saving themselves. Can you imagine how he felt? Imagine, first of all, Grandpa is dead. Dad is dead. And David? He used to be my dad's friend. He's coming, that'll be all right. And they said, no, David is going to kill you. You're part of the royal family. And so this poor little boy at 5 years old has the rug completely pulled out from under him and was probably a very nice rug in the palace. And he stands there and he doesn't know what to do. And bless her heart, his nurse cares about him. And so she scoops him up and starts running for the door. But he's a five-year-old. He's going to kick and scream, and what are you doing? And no, and I want my dad. And what happens is she drops him. And both his legs, his feet are broken. And there's no time to say, there, we'll put a Band-Aid on or get a splint. She grabs him again, and they take off. And this poor little boy's world has just come down on top of him. He's getting a cloud, just like Joe, above his head. Why is this happening to me? I don't want to be here. I don't want this to happen. I'm frightened. The story is that they take him off and put him in hiding. And that's no wonder. He's probably in danger, they figure. And so the family that's left, or the people that are left, take off to a place called Lodabar. Now, Lodabar means the place of no harvest, the place of no bread. Does that sound like a sort of an oasis of green, lush, flowing fountains to you? It's a desolate place. It's a place where there is nothing. Nothing will grow. Nobody wants to live there. So this is a good place to hide out. And that's where little Mephibosheth lands up. One day the palace, the next day Lodabar. No family. No understanding of what's happening. No food, because this is a terrible place and there's nothing to eat here and nobody's growing anything. And worst of all, no legs, because he's been badly hurt. And in those days, there weren't the facilities we might have had to help him now. He's 5 years old. And he's got a cloud over his head. It's raining on him today. Have you ever had moments like that when all of a sudden in life everything's going fine? And then, wham, you go to the doctor and you hear a diagnosis you don't want to hear. You get a phone call. Something happens to a child. A job falls apart. And all of a sudden, everything that you think is familiar and safe is just gone. Rain clouds over our heads. Happened to Joe, and it's happening to Mephibosheth too. He's now no longer the pampered little prince. He's an outcast and a fugitive. And always in the back of his mind from now on is, oh, what if David finds me? And every time there's a knock at the door, could that be David coming to get me? Could it be the soldiers? His life is probably obsessed with this fear of being taken aback, got rid of, the last of Saul's household. We don't want them around. We have a new king now. And you know the saddest part, I think? Not only did he have everything else taken from him, they took away his name. And it wasn't this name that we're having such trouble with this morning. Because in Chronicles it tells us that Jonathan actually named his son Meribbaal, which means an opponent of Baal. It's a nice, strong, princely warrior kind of name. You know, he was going to fight Baal, the false god, for Israel. But they decide to change that too. That makes sense. People in our day who are hiding change their names. And so he's no longer Meribbaal. He's Mephibosheth. And you know what that means? Son of shame. So he's 5 years old. He's lost everything. He can't walk. And he's a son of shame. It's a big black cloud, this little guy has acquired just in one day. Now the years go by, and I'm sure it doesn't get any better for Mephibosheth. He lives in Lodabar, this terrible place that nobody wants to be, and he grows up, and always he's listening, and he knows that David has become king, and he knows there have been battles, and he knows there have been victories, and one day something happens. Nobody knows why, but David is thinking maybe back to the good old days when he and Jonathan were such good friends, and he's remembering what it was like. And so we carry on in 2 Samuel chapter 9. Is that up there? 1 to 5. Good. Okay, I'm going to read it from there. David asked, "Is there anyone still left of the house of Saul to whom, listen to this, I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of Saul's household named Ziba. They called him to appear before David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" "Your servant," he replied. The king asked, "Is there no one still left of the house of Saul to whom I can show God's kindness?" Ziba answered the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. And note this, he is crippled in both feet." Every time we mention Mephibosheth in the Bible, it says after his name, "And he is crippled in both feet." It's like a label he's acquired. "Where is he?" the king asked. And Ziba answered, "He's at the house of Machir, son of Amiel, in Lodabar." You expect a sort of a sound in the background every time you hear the word Lodabar. So King David had him brought from Lodabar, from the house of Machir, son of Amiel. Now this is really scary times. This is when it really happens. There's this knock on the door, and after all these years, somebody says, "David wants to see you." And that cloud must just get bigger and bigger. the rain starts coming down. Poor little man. He's gone through so much. He thinks he's safe now. It's so long. And now David has sent for him. So this is the end. He comes to meet David. This man that maybe he remembers from when he was a child as a kind man, a friend of his father's. But now he's the enemy. He's always been the enemy since he was 5 years old. And this man has come for him and is going to get him. Chapters 9, verses 6 to 8 carries on. When he came, Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David. He bowed down to pay him honor. Can you imagine how he felt when he bowed down? Putting your head down when you're expecting a sword across the back of your neck is not comfortable. David said, Mephibosheth, your servant, he replied. He's got to be the servant now, not the prince. Don't be afraid, David said to him, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. And Mephibosheth bowed down and said, what is your servant that you should show kindness to a dead dog? That's the son of shame speaking. He sees himself, imagine, he sees himself like a dead dog. What an awful self-image. Who could blame him? Who could blame him? And now, all of a sudden, his life is changing again. This is enough to create a nervous breakdown in any modern man. He's lived with fear. He's been through all the changes. And now, all of a sudden, this King David, of whom he was so afraid, this man he's hated and run away from for so many years, is saying, don't be afraid. I want to give you back all the land that your grandfather Saul owned. This is not a little garden in the corner, you know, with vegetable patch where you can get your own food and a house where you can sit in your wheelchair and watch the world go by. This is huge property, probably, belonging to the king. I want to give it to you. But even better, I want you to sit at my table. I want you to be a part of my family. I want you to sit with my sons. This is really hard for this little man to take in. But he did. He moved in with King David, the fearsome one, the one that he was terrified of. And Ziba, the guy who it sounds like this servant was a bit of a conniver because he'd managed to get his way into David's household, even though he was part of Saul's entourage. And when David asked about Mephibosheth, he sort of says, oh, you know, there's this child out there in Lodabar, this man. But he's a cripple, not worth thinking about, putting him down. Ziba is now made to be the servant of Mephibosheth. Do you want to put on the last one, please, Greg? Then the king summoned Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table. And we see that Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants, so that was quite a nice little household for Mephibosheth to take over. Then Ziba said to the king, your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And he had a young son himself named Micah. And all the members of Ziba's household were his servants. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table. And there we have it again. and he was crippled in both feet. When things go wrong for us, it's hard to get rid of the labels, isn't it? When we've been hurt, they hang around. But you know, I do think that cloud started to vanish at that point. And he became the king's grandson again. Not only that, but part of the new king's family. Such an honor to be invited to sit at the table. And you know, when he sat at that table with David's sons and his family, no one would see the crippled feet. I think that's a great ending to the story of Mephibosheth. Things didn't work out that well for poor old Joe back in Little Abner Land. He didn't have anybody to come and take that cloud away for him. It would have been nice if somewhere along the line Al Cap had made a happy ending for him. Because I think the two men were very similar. And I think for us too, there are times when we really face fear, loneliness, hardship, upheaval, life just turning us upside down. But what I want us to look at right now is the sublime part of this story. It's what's happening with David. Little Abner, he was a hero. He was great. He was good looking. He was strong. But he never really achieved very much. David, he was a hero. He was a hero as a soldier. People loved him. That was one of the reasons Saul hated him so much. But there was something special about David. When the Lord chose him, and the Lord did choose him to be king, he said, I have found this young man David, son of Jesse, and he is a man after my own heart. And that was the difference in the story. This is why Mephibosheth landed up at the table of the king, because David's heart was not just well-meaning like little Abner's. And David's hero was not some tough guy, some soldier that he admired. David's hero was the Lord God of Israel. And he wanted the same heart as God's. During the week, I sat and thought, I need to know more about David. And I went through so many of his psalms because that's where his heart shows. Can I share just a few? These are the kinds of things that David poured out from his heart. On God rests my salvation and my glory. My mighty rock, my refuge is God. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. I delight to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. How precious is your steadfast love, O God. The children of mankind take refuge in the shadow of your wings. Doesn't this sound like a story we've just heard? They feast on the abundance of your house, and you give them drink from the river of your delights. Coming to sup with the Lord. You are my Lord. I have no good apart from you. And you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. My cup overflows. It's exactly what David's heart did for this unfortunate young man. He had supped at God's table. He felt like he was part of God's dining table. God's heart is to seek and to save that which is lost. And David shared that kind of heart with Mephibosheth. And we, all of us, are Mephibosheth. And we often feel like Joe. We too have been crippled by a fall. We are part of a broken and fallen mankind. And the Bible says all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We've fallen. We're broken. We're crippled. We are also in a desolate place in which we are separated from God. Does that feel very real sometimes, just looking around the world right now? It can be a very desolate place we live in. And if we escape from God and leave him behind or hide from him, there is no bread. We live in a dark, dreary place without our God. It's a place of no bread. But the good news is that Jesus, the bread of life, has come into our lives. We may fear God, expecting his punishment, waiting for that knock on the door saying, "Your sins have found you out. Judgment is coming." And so we hide out and we separate ourselves from God. But he came not to condemn, the Bible tells us, but to save. The exciting thing is we are sought out by the King of Kings. David didn't just sort of sit and wait till one day he happened to hear a name and, oh, just look after that guy. He sought out Mephibosheth because he had the heart of God. And God seeks us out. He looks for us. He wants us. Remember the story Jesus told of the prodigal son? When the father could see the son coming, he didn't sit back and say, "About time you came to your senses." He went running with his arms wide open to welcome him home. He pursues us. He's looking for us. He's wanting us to come and be at his banqueting table. We are chosen and invited by the King to be at his table. Jesus said, "Just as my Father has granted me a kingdom, I now grant you the right to eat and drink at my table in my kingdom." Luke 22. And the sacrifice of Jesus, when we're at his table, it covers all the crippling, all the mess, all the mistakes, all the clouds of heaviness. Just as that table covered the broken legs of Mephibosheth. The words that sum up the heart of God, as David saw it, were restore, redeem, renew, and refresh. When the King comes calling, we move from the poor house into the palace. That's wonderful. In Romans, I found these words, "For you did not receive the spirit of bondage, again to fear." Bondage, fear. "But you received the spirit of adoption." Come and sit at the King's table with the family, by whom we cry out, "Abba, Father." It's sort of like, "Daddy, I'm home." Amen.